we found that we're the number three property in all of Lake Lure, which is incredible to think about. Not just any, not we're not talking about our comp set in terms of 4 to 6 bedrooms, but literally of all properties in Lake Lure, our growth from a gross revenue standpoint, according to AirDNA, we're number three.
Hi, I'm Wyatt. Our dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews that we post every single Friday. We're my favorite conversations. We get to talk to other short-term rental investors, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between on their journey into short-term rental investing. Today, we've got Ms. Catherine Lewis joining us. Catherine, appreciate you joining us and sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Awesome. And so we're going to dive in, and just a fair warning to those of you listening, this has been a wild ride, and one that we're going to talk about a lot. Some things that could completely not be avoided, or that was just kind of big surprises. Other things that we might learn that we wish we would have done a little different. But before we dive into the wild ride, Catherine, let's back up and just tell everybody where you're from, what got you interested in short-term rental investing in the first place, any kind of real estate investing in the past, what pays the bills, just a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Sean. So I have always been in just corporate America. My general way I pay the bills is currently in technology in a big tech company. I live in the Bay Area. And I always thought that investing was for super smart people that knew a lot of things that I didn't know. And then I hit my 40s and I realized that I had a lot more to give in this world than I was giving myself credit for. I met my partner, Rob, who's been my partner in crime, both in life and for the business. And we started talking about real estate investing as a way to build wealth and secure our future for our families. But I think the biggest thing for me was I realized that, you know, my corporate job wasn't going to be the way that I achieved the freedom that I wanted. And I wanted to be able to do things outside of the realm. I read the book, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I started getting on this train of like, I need to do things differently. And so it's been a super interesting journey to get there. And I'm grateful for all the lessons.
Love it. When was that? When did you read the book and when did we start thinking about, yeah, maybe we're going to do a little bit something different?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was probably about 4 years ago. And then yeah. Rob and I started talking about real estate investing probably about 2 years ago now.
Nice. You know, it's such a foundational book for so many people. I was actually just talking to my kids, Wyatt and Grace. So we put them through a lot of personal finance stuff, and we started them off with the Dave Ramsey stuff. And then now they're reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and his series of books. And they're like, well, Dad, this is like, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad makes fun of Ramsey. And he says, we shouldn't do this. I said, no, you know, you have these layers of like what we learn and what we're, you know, and so it's interesting because now they're in that, but there's so many people I talk to that, you know, that book in and of itself has opened so many people's eyes. Robert Kiyosaki did such a great job of just laying it out of, hey, how are we gonna look at these different quadrants, and how are we gonna go from, you know, the corporate jobs and, you know, the W-2 income, and then, you know, step out of that realm and at least starts getting us thinking about it, right? So so 4 years ago, you know, Rob started saying maybe we like real estate. Did you dive into any other asset classes first? Did you start to, I mean, like most people, it probably explored some different asset classes?
Yeah. So Rob had started to go down the road of the Burr method. He was looking here in California. This was at the edge of the time that interest rates were starting to increase significantly. But he had already started looking at the time when there was still low cost of capital. And then things started changing. I actually had zero really thought around any other method until I started to actually just dive in and think, well, what can I do? I have a background in hospitality and marketing specifically. And so when we were looking at the type of method that got us really excited and the asset class that made the most sense for us and what we know and what we're good at, short-term rentals was the space that combined so many things, especially because we're passionate about travel. So being able to position and market your product also is most effective when you're excited about the thing that you're selling. And in the case of short-term rentals, marketing is a huge piece, and it felt like we could really be successful there. So that's why we went that route.
Love it. Love it. I love what you just hit on, where you said, because so many people, and we're going to dive into kind of what where you guys ended up, because it wasn't in your backyard in California. It was across the country. And but you mentioned something right there that is that I think is critical to your success with short-term rentals, because short-term rentals have a lot to do with how we market these properties, how we sell these experiences. And you said, you know, it's you're such a better marketer and you're going to do a much better job if you like the product you're selling, right? And I always tell people to buy properties that you would like visiting, look at markets that you would like to own in. And many times on the investor side of it, they're like, why are you starting there? Like, I need a good return. I need to look at the numbers. I mean, all of those things are factors, but I know how important the back end marketing is. And so we start with trying to find properties that people would be interested in, because as a marketer yourself, you understand that we do a lot better job marketing things we like and are interested in if that's the product we're selling.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. For us, you know, we love nature. And so one of the reasons why we chose the area we did was because of the incredible beauty around the property. I have to say, I always thought we'd vacation there, and we have gone and enjoyed our hot tub, but every time we're at the property these days, we're doing so much work that we actually can't enjoy it. So we're waiting for the day to take the kids to be actual, you know, to prevent ourselves from, you know, just tinkering with everything that needs to be fixed. So.
Yeah, there will always, you always will find something, I promise you. It's funny, but there's a, you know, the IRS rule of saying, hey, listen, you can't have more than 14 personal use days on your property, or you can't claim it as an investment, right? So it's a kind of a rule there. And there's a lot of investors that are getting in like, I don't want, I mean, that seems like such a limitation. I'm like, you know how lucky you would be if you had actually 14 days where you weren't working on your damn property, you know?
It is true. Like,
even so, there's always something to tinker on. I said I've owned vacation homes that were not short-term rentals, and I don't know that I had 14 personal use days in a year, because you seemed like there's always something to do. So yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. So you guys are California based, and we started to explore some of the markets, and I know that we were looking at multiple different markets throughout that, right? And it sounds like one of the criteria was you like the nature markets, you know, like the outdoor type markets. So how did we start that journey of where we were going to end up and land?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating process. I think we definitely were prioritizing nature-driven markets because of the reasons we discussed. But we also were really just, we decided that for us, the most important part was cash flow. And so in our buy box, you know, being able to look at, you know, the various pieces, we were just like, okay, where is a good investment? What markets are affordable enough for us at the price point that we have? So we actually started looking in South Bend, Indiana for the Notre Dame market. We realized that that was a unique market, and maybe it wasn't the best one for us as first-time investors, because you have pretty much 6 weekends of the year to hit your like main revenue targets. Yeah. And we were just not feeling up for that kind of risk for us as new operators. We felt like, okay, let's go to a place that has a bit more consistent demand. We started evaluating other markets outside of South Bend, first in the Poconos because of the price point. Again, it started to, we had a specific buy box and a really fantastic agent. And I will say one tip that I think is a huge one for people starting is that your agent is your best friend. They are the ones who are on the ground that know the regulations inside and out. They know what works. They know what properties and areas, like little micro nuances around neighborhoods. And also in the Poconos, there's a lot of heavy regulation. And if you don't even understand like the HOAs in the town, like the HOA can prevent you from, you know, access or being able to operate. And there was talks in some HOAs that were that they would ban it. So you really want to make your agent your best friend. We had a great agent, Michael Klein from Savvy. He was like really in the weeds with us. But what we realized was that what we were looking for was not coming up in the time frame that we were planning on buying. Like, we were ready to just dive in. We happened to listen to a podcast about North Carolina and realized that we were looking for strong real estate fundamentals first and foremost. Like, is it a growing economy? How is the appreciation for real estate? We were looking at some of the standard things that you would do for due diligence And then you have to layer on top short-term rental potential. Yeah. So the Asheville area had stood out to us. There was some really strong numbers. I will say, I think we underestimated the entry point. We were getting really comfortable with the idea of every time we had written actually a few offers in the Poconos that we didn't we actually got out of a deal because we felt like it was a there was some risk with the roof that we weren't comfortable with. And so when we were landing in Asheville, we were already ready for like, okay, we've done this, we've written the offer a few times, and then we ended up at a $700,000 price point when we initially we were looking at $300,000, and that was like just getting comfortable with the idea of yeah. a big, huge price tag. But we felt like the market had borne out that there was enough demand in the area and growing demand, and it's a beautiful area. So we realized that, you know, we could take on a larger property than we had anticipated. And we thought, again, we had an agent who found our property in Lake Lure. He really loved the views. We have an incredible view of Lake Lure, but also the Blue Ridge Mountains beyond. And it was the kind of thing that we knew had a uniqueness that at a price point that we could see it was a good deal. So we jumped in.
Awesome. And I love that you brought up the agent there and highlighted that relationship. I've been in real estate for 25 years. I used to have a brokerage here in Utah, and we were dialed into this market. Now even though I live in this area, right? Even though like we all think that we understand the areas and we understand the nuances. Once you really understand what those nuances are, you realize how much you don't know without that really good local expert. And I've been in real estate for a long time. I still have family and friends that will call because they know that I'm a real estate investor. I don't do local real estate here in Utah and haven't for years. And they'll call up and say, hey, do you think this is a good deal? Or, hey, what do you think about this? And I say, I don't have any clue. Like when I buy in my own backyard, I still hire those agents that are really dialed in.
Yeah.
And so if it's important in my own backyard, it's really important when you get way outside of your backyard, right?
100%.
And you are so spot on. And it's such a great point to make is how valuable the right agent is in that entire process to help you not walk into this buzzsaw down the line, because not everything shows up on a spreadsheet that we can download with data, right?
Yeah,
and so there, every single area has good areas, bad areas. Like just one street over is a major divider in an area. And if we're not local and we don't know that and we're not dialed in, and to your point, regulations, HOAs, all those different things, are they STR friendly? Are they not STR friendly? Are they friendly right now, but there's talk about it not being friendly? Those agents that are dialed in can save you a massive amount of headaches down the line. And really, I mean, I think that people underestimate how important that person is until you've been in the game and really done it. So I really appreciate you bringing that, like that point up, so that when people are thinking about this, it's such an important point and such an important partner.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So when we found the one in North Carolina, Lake Lure, and we put an offer on it. Were you navigating both of those markets at the same time? You had an agent in North Carolina, one in the Poconos, and you guys were like, hey, we're ready to move. Whichever one comes up first, we're good. Or did you fully move from Poconos, the Poconos area?
I mean, at the time that we were still open to the Poconos at the time that we were we wrote an offer actually in another town in outside of Lake Lure that we didn't get accepted. So we were starting to move into North Carolina. And I think it's hard to carry both, like to be on, like I would check Zillow obsessively for the Poconos. Like I would get alerts. I knew what I think that's also a point that I wanted to make was know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Dial into the thing that you think is, so look at your price point. Like what can you afford realistically? And I think it's super important to build in a significant budget for design and amenities. And so if you know that you have to spend a certain amount in the Poconos, as an example, amenities are huge. Like the houses that do well have all the things, right? And if you have to do all the things, then you can't afford a $600,000 house if your budget is, you know, you have to layer in those. And so as we were looking at it, we got really clear on what we could do. And then as we were moving into North Carolina, it was just natural. Like I just time-wise started becoming obsessed with, you know, North Carolina. But I think that the point is that if you know you're looking for something specific, then one market may not give you enough, you know, inventory if you're really looking to make a move fast, right? And so spreading out and having a couple different markets that meet the criteria that you're looking for and having a good agent. And, you know, the agent in Poconos, bless his heart, you know, he spent a ton of time with us and he knew that eventually we could come back, you know, as a client. But he still did the work knowing that we were looking elsewhere. And inevitably we landed in North Carolina.
Yeah. So when you say, you know, really define that buy box and be very diligent about it, it's so important on the front end. You will naturally just spin your wheels and spin your wheels if everything's an option.
It's
hard enough to dial it in when you have a very specific buy box. If you're very open and to kind of whatever comes around, you inevitably almost never buy a property. I see it all the time. You're just on this hamster wheel because there's no perfect property, no perfect market. And if you have no perfect buy box to dial in to really try to navigate that, it makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And I always tell people too, navigating multiple markets is hard because like you said, you're on Zillow all the time. It makes it way easier to navigate multiple markets when you have a very specific criteria of what you're looking for. And you mentioned budget as well. The biggest mistake I see new investors make in this game is not giving themselves enough budget on the back end for design and setup than that it takes to really operate at the top of the market. It's one of the reasons that those people who do give themselves that budget are able to really eliminate 90% of the market, because most people, they blow their entire budget on a really nice house in a nice area, but they don't have the budget to bring it to life. They don't have the budget to create these immersive experiences, or in a market that you have to have all the stuff, they don't have the money to get all the stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so it ends up being like, usually I tell people, whatever your down payment is, you're probably gonna spend at least that on the back end. And so you better have double your down payment. And it's based on price per square foot. You could be in a market where you're, you know, different than California, where you're buying, like when you look at some of these places, you're like, man, this is a bargain price per square foot. But so you're getting a lot of square foot you've got to furnish, right? So when it goes to that, there's a big price tag on the back of this thing after you buy the property.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think for us, knowing the few key pieces of investments were going to be amenities, I think that each market also has potentially a different buy box based on what does well there. You know,
totally
like agree. Having in the Poconos, we had a specific kind of, we wanted more land. We needed a bigger house for the amenities. But the views were less important because most people just look at the trees and it's actually quite normal. It's actually a moat if you have more land, like having a third of an acre is pretty normal. And if you can build in the right amenities, people don't care that, you know, there's a house right next door. Yep. Whereas North Carolina, in the mountains, you know, long range views sell, you know, it's what people go to the mountains for. So I think you really have to pay attention to the market and then dial in your buy box. In some places, for example, you know, our upcoming search, you know, sometime in 2026 is actually dialing it back. We have a 5-bedroom house now and we're focusing on 1-bedroom romantic cabins, which is a totally different play. But the margins are incredible on 1-bedroom luxury cabins. And we don't have as much money left over because we bought this big house and it has been a significant journey to get there. Yeah. So now we're thinking small so that we can afford the right things.
I love it. And you're exactly right. Like the general advice of you have to go put this amenity in or that amenity in, or you have to have this or you have to have that, can lead people down the wrong road very fast because every single market is different. And every single market has different buy boxes and different things that the consumer wants and different. You could be in the same market with a different size of home, right? The 5-bedroom home is going to be more important to have certain things than it is going to be in the 1-bedroom. And the 1-bedroom is going to highlight certain things that the 5-bedroom is probably not, right? And so it can be literally different buy boxes based on the size of the house, and understanding that that's the game we're playing. at the end of the day is what is the best experience we can put together for our target audience? Well, the target audience for a 5-bedroom home is different than the target audience for a 1-bedroom home, right?
Yeah, totally.
And so, absolutely, and markets are different. And so let's dive into this journey that we took from getting this property. Talk us about timelines and then some of the things that happened right after we bought this sucker.
My goodness, I mean, hurricanes in the mountains, wildfires, wells that break. We've had, if you name the issue that you could face in a first year, I think we've done it. The big one, of course, is we bought a house in, you know, an area that is not known to be impacted by hurricanes. And yet in we closed in, you know, mid-September. And then 10 days after we closed, just as we had ordered all of our furniture for the house, Hurricane Helene, which became a tropical storm, but had the, you know, devastation of a hurricane still, came and dumped an historic amount of rain in the mountains, which then led to historic flooding and historic damage. Our town in particular has a lake that also has a dam that then it feeds into this other system of rivers. The rivers became massive floods, took out practically the whole town next to us. The whole downtown was pretty much erased. Thankfully, our house was on the higher end of the town, so that in terms of just being more elevated allowed us to avoid some of the lower level flooding. And our house thankfully avoided any trees coming down, but it also meant that we were in the middle of a disaster zone in an area that is driven by tourism. So the, you know, 10 days into owning the house and our entire demand is wiped away. Right. And we have all of our furniture en route to the house, and now it's stuck in FedEx warehouses because no one can deliver anything into an area where there's still downed power lines. And then as a result of that, there was chaos with, you know, no one knew where the furniture went. And so we had, you know, went from the high of like, we've done this, we're starting, to, oh my gosh, now what? We have, you know, no idea what anything's gonna, you know, what's gonna happen from here. We worked with a really great designer that we met through Vodacy, and bless her heart, she had me calling her probably once a week going, so where are we? What do you think we can do? Because at this point we had no furniture, no design, we couldn't launch. And we didn't even know if anyone would come and stay at our house, but we at least needed to get our house up and running by the end of the year so that we could capitalize on the tax advantage. So if we didn't go live by, you know, December 31st and have at least a couple stays, then we would lose the, you know, what they call the SCR loophole. And this big, I mean, part of the main reason why we did this was for this tax benefit. So we pushed forward, our designer hustled, we changed, you know, furniture out, we moved, you know, and moved mountains for us to get live by about mid-December. And within, a day or so, we had Christmas and New Year booked. So we were like, hallelujah, we have people coming to the house. And so we were able to close the year with that, you know, like checkbox, if you will. But then the journey from there was, you know, definitely not roses, right? We had hired a PM to take over the house, but we realized pretty quickly that he wasn't the right fit for us. And also we were not making enough money on this house we were at like 12% occupancy for January and February. We had to jump in and become property
managers.
Still
in an area that's reeling from all the damage, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that we had 12%, you know, was we had a couple weekends booked, speaks to. Yeah. So, you know, in Vodacy, we're taught about, you know, the process of how to think about design and how to market and position your property. And we'd made some really smart choices. We had designed, you know, had made decision to really invest heavily in design. We also wanted to be different. Our house doesn't look like a traditional mountain cabin. And Asheville is an area which is just north of the Lake Lure area, is very artsy. I wanted to lean into design that was actually really different, that was bright and colorful with some mountain feel, but that wasn't that kind of like old school cabin style. So I have a lot of bright color, a lot of wallpaper that is a little bit, I wouldn't say garish, but just really like, like bright and in your face in a way that like, yeah. It from a standpoint of marketing, capturing a picture that has this like bright, bold wallpaper, and then, you know, leaning into lifestyle photos. We hired a gentleman named Sam Smith, who's an amazing photographer. Our photography, I mean, that's what people buy. They're not buying your experience yet in the house. They're buying the experience they see in a photograph. And so we spent heavily on photography, and it borne out. You know, as soon as we picked up our house, property managing, we actually dropped our prices pretty quickly. We were, at this point, we just needed, you know, people in the house. And so, we were going for as much occupancy as we could get, even if at the, you know, of course, there's a certain threshold, you can't go any cheaper than a certain amount, but we, from the base price, we were just like, just get people in
and get some people in here. Yeah.
The crazy part is that we went from 13% in February, like, to 85% occupied in March, which is like nuts to me. And it was because people were starting to realize that Lake Lure was opening again. I got a lot of questions from people saying, can we get in? Is there stuff to do? And actually the town has started to pull together, you know, and be able to offer some of the experiences that people wanted. And ultimately you're in a mountain area. Like, people don't go to go shopping. They go to, you know, they go to see the beauty of the area. And with some good choices on, you know, on pricing, our spring break month, was, you know, we had an incredible amount of people come through. So it was really exciting.
So that, and you had already taken it over by then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, right. That's right when you started managing it, we got into spring break. So walk me through, let's just kind of walk through the year on that first year, with everything that kind of was going on.
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple things that, you know, as a starting point, you have to have your team on the ground. So I obviously live in California. It's very difficult to manage a house in North Carolina without the right people. So the first starting point was finding a new cleaner. We really didn't feel like the attention to detail of the cleaner who had been hired through the property manager was there. And she was also charging a significant amount more than the average in the market. So we did our research, right? Like, what do things cost and who do we need to bring on board in order to find that right balance of, you know, our own expenses and being able and knowing what we can charge to guests. So we hired a new cleaning team. I think for us, the learning around operating is asking lots of questions. I don't know everything. You know, I picked up this, you know, I'm now an Airbnb host, right? Like, I've never done this in my life. I've never operated, you know, a short-term rental. So asking lots of questions of the people around. So, you know, the communities that you're a part of, obviously Vodacy is a huge community and tons of people have been doing this a long time. So posting questions and asking like, what do I need to know? And then also asking lots of questions of the people I'm hiring in terms of what drives them? Like, what do they pay attention to? What's their business like? Because ultimately, by having conversations with the people you're hiring, you're learning about what, like, how are they going to show up when they're actually doing their job. So we hired a new cleaning team, and then we got really a lot of referrals through our network for local handyman, people who are going to be there. You know, we had a damaged well system, and we had no idea what was the problem. So I've learned a significant amount more about wells than I ever wanted to know. And we had moments where literally I have trauma from moments of like our guests messaging us saying, "Hey, we have no water," and you know it's like panic. Okay, now what? You know, a house should have water. You can't have a house without water, right? So being able to have speed dial to people who could help us fix that, first of all, just to get to the house, to be able to, you know, like appease the guests and have them think that, you know, not sometimes we didn't know if it was going to be fixed, but, and, you know, we were always honest, but having them feel like we were doing something always mattered. I come from a background. So I worked in a hotel, a 5-star hotel, as a marketing manager for 5 years. And the biggest thing I learned from that experience was the guest is always right. And it doesn't mean that you always give in to them or that you break your policies. But if you take the approach that the guest is right and they need to feel like they are, then every communication and every action you take from there is going to feel supportive of them having being heard, like they feel like you care and they're doing something, ultimately saves you from, like, I have a, and I want to knock on wood here, I have a 5-star perfect record right now. Like, I have received 55-star reviews this year. And that's because of how proactive I am about meeting guests where they are and making sure that they feel heard and taken care of. And so when we have these issues that pop up, like a well that's not pumping water, you know, getting on the phone with them and being like, hey, this is impacting your vacation. I'm really sorry about that. And I, you know, I didn't break the well, but I will fix it. And so being able to, then get all of my, network and find the people who can help me get it done as quickly as possible. So from spring break, after it being 85% occupied, it gave us the sense of, okay, maybe we can do this. We had considered selling the house. We contacted a real estate agent in February because it's either, I think as an investor and as a business person, you have to make hard decisions quickly. If you feel like you're in the wrong position, cutting your losses and not like getting stuck in sunk costs, I should do this because I put all this money in. We wanted to be really clear on like options. And so one was to sell. And we realized that that would be at a loss that we weren't comfortable with. And we hadn't even given ourselves a chance to operate and see what would happen. So that's what we did. And that, so fast forward into spring break and into summer. This is like one of those moments where it's like a light bulb. I was on Facebook and noticed that a local real estate agent was selling a piece of land in our town that had access to lakes that were actually open for the summer. So one piece of, information that would be helpful in terms of, our problems was that our lake, our main lake in Lake Lure, was closed for the summer, which is our biggest season, which is the biggest draw. And so getting creative and finding opportunities to overcome that had become my mission. So we actually bought a piece of land that has nothing on it just to be able to get access to the local lakes that were actually open and ready for the summer for guests. In doing so, we were one of the only houses in the area that had access to swimming and boating and this beautiful private beach. So we marketed that. And through the summer, I definitely know that it made a difference in our occupancy. Looking back over the year, I think we're roughly 20 points ahead in occupancy than our average comp set. So it speaks to, I think, first of all, like our 5-star reviews, but also finding ways to overcome whatever it is that you have in your way and creating experiences for guests that are unique. And in that case, in a town with zero access to their public lake, having the ability to give guests the beach and lake experience, I think was huge for us. So we've now been through, this past season of the lake. We went through, our leaf season, which thankfully, was a pretty strong one. Our occupancy, again, has been quite strong. This year for us, as we head into 2026, we found that we're the number 3 property in all of Lake Lure, which is incredible to think about. We're not talking about our comp set in terms of 4 to 6 bedrooms, but literally of all properties in Lake Lure, our growth from a gross revenue standpoint, according to AirDNA, we're number 3. For me, that's like an amazing achievement because I really thought that it was over from before it began. And so it's exciting to be hitting a new year in this position.
It's awesome. It's such a good story. And I love you hit on so many little points that make such a massive difference that I don't know if everybody always picks up on, but I always say success leaves clues. So you got to kind of reverse engineer what other people are doing. And one, we'll post the property in there so you can see them. But I always say this is a game of 100 golden BBs, not one silver bullet. And so it's all the little things you do to make, you know, to put yourself in a position to succeed. And the decisions you make along the way make massive impacts on the long term. And so, like, even from the beginning of how you set it up, how you designed it, the attention to detail in the photography, getting people interested in it, and then making the moves to give them access to certain things, knowing that they're not able to go to the main lake that's closed, right? And then you really hit on something that I really hope everybody understands on the management side of it. And now I know you're self-managing, but whether you're self-managing or whether you're hiring a professional manager, the making somebody and your guest feel seen, heard, and understood, it's a massive, massive advantage if you can just make them feel like you understand their problems. Hey, listen, you know, the whale goes out. You have 55 star reviews. You have a property that launched 10 days after Hurricane Helene hits and wipes out a lot of the infrastructure in the area. It's a disaster zone, even though your property didn't necessarily get super affected by it, like, you know, individually, the area was completely affected by it. You know, we're going in, you got 12% occupancy, 13% occupancy, we're thinking about selling. We have a jump in, you know, kind of a boost in spring break. We're able to take that through. The well goes out, people are without water. We end up doing all of this, and because of how you handled all those situations, you have the number three revenue property in the entire market, and rolling into your, what we really start to say, where we're starting to optimize and maximize. I mean, it's short-term rentals is a game where it takes 12 to 18 months to stabilize anyways, and without all of those problems, right? And most of us are trying to stabilize in normal markets. And so to be able to do that, now looking back also, it's got to give you a massive amount of confidence to say, I can play this game, and I can play it at a high level. And it kind of, not that you want to have a whole bunch of stuff thrown at you like that, but it does, when you have to deal with that stuff, doesn't it give you that confidence level and that grit to say, yeah, you know what, I can handle this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think I knew going in that this, you know, we've done enough research to understand that this isn't a set it and forget it type of asset class. Like, if you want something that is more hands off, even with a property manager, I would say, like, I, now that I know what it takes to do this work, I think my property, I'm hoping to bring on a property manager and relieve myself of the journey, because it's not exactly, I can do it, but it's not my passion. I would say, having learned what I have, it is the kind of thing that even as an owner, you always want to be prepared and understand, like, what can go wrong and how to position the people you hire to deliver at the level that you know, like, the grit and the intensity and the attention to detail that you have as an owner will never be what, you know, like, you can only transfer that, you know, it's not going to be necessarily the standard for everyone that you bring on. And I feel like everything I've learned, even though I had not anticipated being in the position to operate this house, having this knowledge is incredibly valuable, and moving forward will make me much more successful in any choices I make or any other investments I make. And I feel like really proud of the journey of being able to have come through all the adversity this year and to come out in a position to feel like this year actually we can actually start paying down our, you know, our debt from last year. And I think, you know, even though, you know, our house, you know, it made over $100,000, and that was, you know, incredible. One thing that, you know, I think everyone often says is you just don't expect the expenses that come in. For example, you know, in our area, we have tons of black bears, and I ended up having to spend almost $3,000 on a metal enclosure to prevent the bears from getting to our trash. And I knew that, like, spending the money made sense, but it was just not an expense that I had put into my pro forma. So having in the first year, I think especially if you buy a house that is a new build like ours, there's just things that didn't exist in the house that we needed. So having that extra cash made a difference for us in a, like, this year is now about actually building cash flow and being able to optimize our pricing. Yeah. And I, you know, am grateful for the trial by fire, even if I didn't invite it to, you know, didn't invite it as a friend to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's right where you're at, right? You're getting to now we're ahead of all that. We, some of the unknowns we found out and we, you know, we like, it's just almost impossible, even though, like, even with our entire Vodacy family, right? We try to like, it's like, and having these conversations and podcasts, it's like, we want people to walk into this with their eyes wide open. And there's just some things you just, you're like, oh, I forgot to tell you about. Yeah. If you have black bears, you're going to have to budget for, you know, yeah, trash enclosures that are, yeah, way more expensive than regular trash containers, right? Like,
yeah.
And so just little things that come up. And so it's always good to just kind of, you know, but once you kind of get through that, every property kind of has that. That's why I always say, give yourself 12 to 18 months to really, yeah, stabilize, to really start to get that optimized, and then start looking at that next step. And from our seat and from looking from the outside, looking in, you know, nobody, we don't never wish any of those trials and tribulations on anybody, but it, you know, there is a massive amount of people rooting and saying, man, that was awesome. We're proud of you as well. Like, I know you're like, I'm proud of you when you said, I'm proud of ourselves for doing it. But, you know, we're watching from the outside looking in. We're super proud of you and Rob for what you did and the decisions you made and the tough decisions to stay in the game. I mean, it was, that was a, in January, February, you had no idea it was going to turn around in March. And you're looking and really just trying to analyze all the options and then being able to kind of capitalize on the opportunities as they came up. It's super fun to see, you know, looking back and saying, man, look at that story. It's amazing. Right. And so,
yeah,
but then also taking those lessons, taking that confidence into the next endeavor. I have always been a fan of the small properties. I love the smaller properties. And I can't wait to see what you guys put together on that one as you guys just say, hey, listen, we're gonna go for that smaller, different experience, maybe a couples retreat. Are you thinking same areas or are you thinking about expanding into different areas?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like North Carolina is still a great state, but wanting to diversify a bit to just de-risk, you know, some of the, yeah, we're looking elsewhere. We're not clear yet. Yeah. I think, you know, east side of the country is definitely more affordable when it comes to,
yeah,
you know, price points. So I wish, yeah, I mean, oh, I have a dream of owning in California, but the cost of to operate and the cost of land, it's just pretty prohibitive, yeah, here, so. Yeah,
it's West Coast, Intermountain West. It gets pretty, it's pretty difficult to pencil out if cash flow is one of our top buy box things that we're trying to check off, right? Because that ratio of acquisition costs are just really, really high out west. I mean, we can have, yeah, really great appreciation, but you're just, your cash flow because of that acquisition cost and the ratio between the revenue you can generate, it makes it a little tougher, right?
Yeah, it does. And I think for me too, one of the things that I really want to do something out of the box this year too, in terms of, I don't know, like I've been fascinated by tree houses or something that brings the outdoors inside, or like romantic experiences that like really are enveloped by nature, maybe an outdoor bath experience, something that I think, you know, the numbers that we see in you know, just generally in the market show that the, you know, the average properties are getting squeezed. And so, you know, you really, yeah, need to think about not just, you know, how you market it, but what are the bones that you're marketing, right? And so as we, yeah, think about smaller properties, being able to purchase enough land that, you know, privacy and seclusion, if you're a couple, yeah, you don't want that house next door. Yeah. You want, exactly, you don't want to be surrounded by the woods or whatever experience it, yeah, is. And being able to have, you know, something different and unique that you, you know, that you share as a couple, you know, drawing on, you know, what I know about what I would want from traveling and being able to find the right mix of, you know, affordability and space to do the amenities. Yeah, we'll see. It's the fun. For me, this, yeah, is the fun part.
Yeah, now it's back to the drawing board, right? There's a lot of options and you start to navigate through them, which becomes pretty fun.
Yeah.
Awesome, Catherine. Well, listen, this has been a great conversation. I so appreciate when people are willing to jump on and let people listen in on these conversations. I know how valuable they are and helpful they are, and so I appreciate you doing that. As we wrap up, I always like to ask a final question of, if you had to go back and, you know, maybe you're telling yourself, okay, this next one, this is why I want to make sure I know. And any advice you'd give your younger self, and or anything you'd want somebody to know as they're navigating some of these same decisions?
Yeah. For me, I think the thing that I would say to myself is trust your intuition. There's a lot of ways that I, you know, think about, like, oh, that just, this piece doesn't feel right. Or, you know, like hiring people and feeling like I wasn't getting a strong connection of, like, we are on the same page about, like, our objectives or how you would deliver. And I feel like I had gotten a few hints of, or, you know, we were working with a real estate agent, and he dropped off for like 4 days. And I thought, you know, I don't want to work with somebody who's not on it with me, who doesn't value my time. And I had this, like, feeling of, like, I don't really want, you know, like, I didn't want to, like, ruffle feathers, but I just didn't trust him anymore. But we stayed with him for a while, and we ultimately ended the relationship with, because we just didn't trust his business advice anymore. But if I had trusted my intuition and that initial instinct with people or a deal or whatever it is that, that we were navigating, I would have saved myself a lot of time and headache. Or, you know, the property manager we chose, there's just a lot of different pieces that I had an initial instinct that something doesn't feel right. And I wish I had listened to that instinct to start.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a great piece of advice, especially you women out there. The women's intuition is the sixth sense that should not be ignored. And we hear it and see it all the time. I always tell people, like, we recommend people throughout our group. We recommend realtors, management partners, all this stuff. But I always say, go interview them. Go talk to them. Make sure that you feel in your gut that it's still going to be the right fit. Because there are times where it just doesn't feel like the right, like, it's just not gelling, right? And sometimes your intuition is most of the time spot on. And I love that advice to don't ignore your gut feeling, especially when you're lining up partnerships and things that people you're going to be working with, because even if they had a glowing recommendation from somebody and they might've gelled really great and you just might not as much, right? We're all people and those things matter, and you should pay attention to them. Absolutely. That's why it's always good to talk to multiple people, spend a little bit of time, have some conversations, because then that intuition will start to lead you down the right road, usually, especially for you women, on a pretty regular basis.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And so, awesome, guys. Listen, Catherine, I, again, appreciate this. This has been, these are my favorite episodes that we ever do. Every week I look forward to our experts' interviews with the short-term rental investors. I so appreciate the story and the willingness to share the story, because it means a lot to people. We hear it all the time, how big of a deal it makes to somebody that's thinking about getting in this game, that you're, especially people that are willing to share the ups and the downs, but also just the, you know, being able to, you know, kind of feel like we're part of that journey with you. That was such a journey that we all want to say, yeah, that's awesome, right? We're so proud of you. And so it's fun to hear those as well. And I'm super looking forward to this next year with this property, optimizing and maximizing. And then we'll set a date for next year to talk about the smaller property and see how that one went. So we appreciate you joining us. Those of you that are listening, we appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's very valuable, and it means a lot that you spend it with us. And so when you do, that's appreciated. Our goal is to help people walk into this game with their eyes wide open. If you know somebody else that likes to be part of these conversations, I don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. This is only organic traffic. And so if you know somebody else that would like to be a part of these conversations, I always appreciate it if you share the show or like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the algorithm will share it with other people that are just like you. And so those things are appreciated. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.